Talk 650.
Hi, you're back with Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on Talk 650. I'm here with Atlantic Monthly contributor D.B. Grady. So, David, we were talking about the roles of the reserve versus active duty versus National Guard. I guess my perception was always active duty was those were the soldiers that got deployed. Reserve was what you had behind them so that you could shift your forces or reinforce forces where necessary. And I guess National Guard, I've always thought of, you know, these are your part-time soldiers, but essentially your home guard. Was that a misunderstanding on my part, or have the roles changed?
No, you're exactly right, and the roles really do have seem to have changed. These days, you're just as likely to encounter a guardsman or a reservist as you are an active duty soldier when you're downrange, downrange being in a combat zone.
Has that affected to any extent? I mean, we have the longest demilitarized borders in the world, and I think Americans kind of take that for granted. They don't understand how rare that is, either now or historically. If I mean, are we in any way diminishing our home security by sending our National Guard, our home guard, off to overseas like this?
Well, we saw during Hurricane Katrina that it did turn into a bit of a problem when Louisiana National Guardsmen were not available, and this also applied to Mississippi, were not available for emergency assistance in New Orleans and along the Gulf Coast. Similarly, right now, if you look at the debate over Arizona's new law with regard to securing the borders and new evidence that's turning up saying, hey, we found Al-Qaeda cells, you know, setting up shop along the Mexican border. Yeah, that's a problem. But on the other hand, are we going to start using guardsmen as border patrol agents? I don't know the answer to that question, but I suspect the answer is not to any significant degree.
Well, actually, you raise a very interesting point. I know that there has been a lot of talk on the Republican side, the conservative side, about using our military or using our National Guard to secure our border. And I think that there are a couple of things here. The first thing is, don't they understand that when you send National Guard, you are essentially militarizing your border, something to which Mexico might be politically forced to respond? And then we could end up with, you know, first we have like this little smidgen of militarization going on either side. And I mean, this could be a very hard bell to unring, so to speak. And also that the National Guard is really not trained for this kind of duty. I mean, they are trained to essentially confront an enemy. They're not trained for what amounts to a form of civilian police duty. It's a very nasty situation to start talking about sending regular military down to the border.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a road that one has to really think through before they go down. I will say with regard to peacekeeping and the guard, the reserve, the active duty, they are very, very well versed in peacekeeping operations and security operations. Just from the nature of the way the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq shifted, and current counterinsurgency strategies. So I don't see us sending guardsmen to the borders and opening fire on Mexicans. That said, I also don't see the president mobilizing 150,000 National Guardsmen and sending them to Arizona and California and New Mexico.
Well, what we need is Border Patrol people. I mean, that's what we do. We need Border Patrol people.
I'm no authority on what would solve that problem, but I suspect that if that's your goal, if your goal is to stop people from crossing the border, then you're going to need a lot of people, a lot of cameras, and a lot of accountability.
And I remember right after this thing came up with the Arizona law that there was a big publicity or there was a big PR thing about sending some National Guard to the border. And the pictures they showed had them going to the border crossings. And that isn't where the problem is. Why are we sending any National Guard people to border crossings? The problem is the non-crossing areas of the border. It's all very strange.
And that all goes back to you have a very well-trained, very professional, very, very experienced military, but you've got to use them smartly. You've got the civilian authority has to be as sharply trained as the military authority, and they've got to be utilized effectively.
It comes down to really accepting the the input of professionals and then having the civilians make an informed decision. And sometimes you wonder if they're acting informed.
Absolutely.
Do you think that our military is broken through overuse to any extent?
I do think that they are overused. I do not think they are broken. I think that a lot of these guys are exhausted. A lot of the more elite units and a lot of the hard-fighting infantry units and the Marine Corps units, a lot of these guys are tired of being deployed. But at the same time, everybody who is currently fighting has volunteered or re-enlisted post 9/11. So it's not as though they didn't know what they were getting into. So I don't offer a whole lot of sympathy for these guys. And when you get right down to it, if your job is professional soldier, you're going to be fighting during a time of war. So is it broken? No. Could it be better? Absolutely.
I'm going to ask you a question that requires a long answer and force you to do it within a minute. Countries as diverse as the Soviet Union and Israel have a conscripted military.
Mm-hmm.
The USSR, when that disintegrated and broke apart into Russia and the previous Soviet states, the conscripted military basically fell apart. Israel also has a conscripted military, and yet it's considered one of the world's finest military services, and it's a universal service. What makes the difference there?
Between the Soviet Union and Israel?
Between a conscripted military in the Soviet Union and a conscripted military in Israel. What are the difference in quality and determination?
I would say that obviously money is a huge factor. Israel is a very successful country, and the Soviet Union is a third world country with nuclear weapons. Also, quite frankly, Israel's been fighting nonstop, or at least their commandos have been fighting nonstop for the last, 60 years. So they're sharp. They know what they're doing, and they're very experienced at it. Whereas the Soviet Union, outside of a few skirmishes here and there, they're not testing their mettle, so to speak.
Okay, we are done for today. I've really enjoyed having you as a guest, David. I want to thank D.B. Grady, Atlantic Monthly contributor, for joining me today. I also want to let you know there is an ACLU of Texas conference coming up July 31st in Austin. You can go to aclutx.org and find out about it. And remember, slower traffic, keep right. It's not just a good idea, it's the law. See you next week.